Hi, friends.
Hello, should I delete that, listeners?
We still have some tickets left for our live tour and we would absolutely love to see you there.
On Thursday, the 23rd of May, we will be performing in the London Islington Assembly Hall.
On Monday, the 27th of May, we will be in Salford.
On Tuesday, the 28th of May, we'll be in Glasgow.
Sunday, the 2nd of June, Birmingham.
Monday, the 3rd of June, Bristol.
And Tuesday, the 4th of June in Southampton.
You can get your tickets at aegpresents.co.uk or via the link in the show notes or our Instagram bios.
We really hope we see you there.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Button Up Box is a fresh dog delivery service that arrives direct to your door and it takes into consideration all of your dog's dietary needs. We love Button Up Box not only because our dogs literally wolf it down twice a day, but because the company all started with a rescue dog called Rudy. And the brand has charity partners and they donate meals to all of their dogs in shelter. They also even donate freezers, which is amazing. And they didn't tell me to include this, by the way. This is just extra. But I love that fact about them. And it's a huge part of the reason that we love and support the brand so much. Anyway, if you want to try Button Up Box out for your dog, they will love it, I can guarantee. You can get 50% off your first two boxes with code AlexandM. That's code AlexandM. Enjoy.
Oh my god, why did I post that? I don't know what to do! Should I delete that?
Yeah, you should definitely delete that. Hello, COVID Connie.
Hello, fellow human. How are you?
Good.
This is so sad. This, the last time that I saw another human being, it was you this time last week.
I can't believe that. That's so, I can't believe it's been a week and you have literally been locked in your bedroom, in one bedroom.
And I've had a shocker of a morning because I was just lying here, minding my own beeswax, you know, day seven of COVID, feeling like shit. And this fucking spider just crawled across my duvet towards my face. And I was like, you know what? Don't worry, buddy. This is your bed now. So I had to give my bed away. So I very nearly was facing 3 days on the carpet, to be honest.
Oh, the audacity of that spider.
I know. Does he not know what I've been through? You know what I mean? Like, under normal circumstances, fine. We'll fight for it. That's fine. But not today, buddy. You've got no idea.
Do you know what? Totally off topic. Well, not off topic, but a bit of a tangent. I thought, so whenever we have a spider inside, like Dave doesn't mind them. So he gets them, picks them up and puts them outside. Because obviously, like, I don't love them, but I would never kill one. But I found out that actually when you do that, it kills house spiders if you put them outside anyway.
Don't.
I
don't.
Know.
Why are you telling
so
me this?
I'm so sorry. I know. I didn't know that.
No, and then I think that's just a successful marketing campaign on behalf
do
of spiders.
Think?
I think they sat in a meeting. Yeah, I do. I think they sat in a meeting and said, guys, we're going to rebrand. We're going to call ourselves house spiders and we're going to tell them that we can't live outside and then they'll feel bad and then they'll keep
That's
us in the warm.
That's so cute.
I don't believe that for a minute. What do you mean house spiders?
Yeah.
What, so like the first species? If you want a house spider, build your own house. You know what I mean? Like,
so this is because I put something on Instagram because there was like a meme about like squashing spiders and I was like, no, just put them outside. And then loads of people replied and was like, that's just as cruel because you're still killing them. So then I was like, oh.
And I actually, I'm not even scared of spiders. That's the fun thing. Normally, because my mom is like properly terrified of them. Like the woman is absolute nails until it comes to spiders and she just crumbles. So I've always dealt with her spiders and that's fine. You know, like it's an area, in fact, that I excel in. But there was something about today. I think it's because I feel so vulnerable.
You caught you off guard.
And this bed and I have, yeah, we've created such a bond together over the last 7 days. You know, it's really molded itself to my little ass. And then, you know, I just felt it threatened. I felt with that spider's arrival, everything that I've spent so long building was
yeah.
threatened. So I had to fight. I had to fight.
It sounds
I won,
like you felt discombobulated.
You just wanted to use that word again, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm just loving it now. I was just trying to use it as much as possible. So Em's got COVID. Audio might not be as good this week because we're not together. We're doing this over Zoom, obviously, because I don't want to catch Em's COVID. So hopefully the audio is not too bad.
I tried really hard to give it to you last week.
Yeah, I can't believe.
You were resistant.
I know.
I thought you and Daisy were toast, I'm going to be honest, because we did sit in that room for a good, like, 8 hours.
And stuffy.
And there was no windows, and I wasn't that well. So on Thursday morning, I took a COVID test, and it was negative. And I didn't feel great, but it was negative. And obviously, the rules are like, you're fine. So, and I wasn't ill. I was like, oh, God, I think I'm a bit run down. And then I did get progressively worse. But then by the end of the day, I was so tired, but we were both so tired. So I was like, well, you know, maybe our souls just hurt because we've been talking for 8 hours. And then I came home, and truthfully, I don't really remember coming home. And then, yeah, I got into bed, and then at 3 a.m. woke up and was like, oh, God.
You were deteriorating. While we went for a drink after the recording, and you were, like, deteriorating fast. I was like, wow, she's
Yeah, I
really
think I look more
tired.
Like a body than a person. Yeah. Daisy just said, she was like, you were a bit horizontal. And actually, I was...
Oh, my God, you poor thing.
I wasn't thriving. Anyway, so, yeah, I've got COVID now. And I keep testing positive, which is annoying, because it's like my best mate's birthday today. So I was optimistic I was going to get out. Because also... Sorry, I was talking about me loads. But I'm supposed to be having my operation on Tuesday. Was supposed to have my operation Tuesday, just gone. And that was my first thought when I got COVID, was obviously I can't have the operation. And then... They say, this is my bad, by the way. This is my bad. So we're just okay. Doing my bad. Sorry.
The good, the bad, and the awkward.
But then, yeah, obviously COVID means that I can't have my operation. And as it turns out, I didn't know this, but generally speaking, they don't put you under general anaesthetic for 7 weeks after you've tested positive for COVID. And I literally was like, well, fuck, I can't wait 7 weeks. I actually got really upset on Friday because if you don't know me or follow me, last February 2021, I had my jaw broken into 3 places and reset because of a problem with my jaw, obviously, and my airway and stuff. And not long afterwards, I felt a crack in my face. And since then, I've basically had pretty consistent pain in my face. And it turns out that one of the screws or two of the screws have been rejected by my body. So that's why I've had this pain for literally months. And I've been holding out for, first of all, the diagnosis, and then second of all, the procedure to have them removed. And it was for February the 8th. I've had so much hope on that date. Like, every bit of pain I've been in for the last few weeks and months, I've been like, it's okay, I've got this date. And then I got fucking COVID and the date was taken away. And I honestly was, I can't tell you. And I felt so sick. Like, I was actually, everyone said that COVID was pretty easy these days. They lied. Then obviously I lost the operation, but the surgeon's team have been so amazing because I was hysterical. I 7 weeks is insane. But they've now changed everything for me, so I can have the procedure next Tuesday, so the day after this comes out, and I'm going to have it under sedation rather than general, so it's still safe. So whatever happens, I am going to get out of this room on Sunday because that's my day 10. I'm going out on Monday for the whole fucking day. I'm going to have the best day of my life. And then on Tuesday, I'm having this operation and I'll get straight back into this bed again.
Oh, you know, I felt so sorry for you. Because, I mean, when you first said you had COVID, I was like, oh, fuck. And then it dawned on me that's what it meant about your operation. Because you are in a lot of pain, aren't you? And I think you're pretty good about not moaning about it. I would not be that good. And, you know, you had your hopes pinned on this operation. And it was just... Yeah, it was, I felt very, very sorry for you, but thank God they've been able to move the operation and that you're getting it done, thank God.
Yeah, thank God. Honestly, I'm not a massive one for feeling really sorry for myself, but when I tell you Friday,
you deserve to feel sorry for yourself.
It was a really bad day. But anyway, we've come through that now and, you know, and I'm actually, arguably I'm thriving. In here, I've got big plans for March.
Like, I bet you do.
So I'm sorry. I just jumped straight in with my bad, but it was the elephant in the room. I am the elephant in the room. Should we just start negatively? Do you want to give me your bad of the week?
Let's start negatively. Yeah. I mean,
we'll do goods afterwards.
We'll bring the mood back up. Like, I'm not gonna go too much into it, but like, I've not had the best week work wise. A few things sort of came out
all at once. And while like nothing in isolation was catastrophic, it was just like, it was more, to be honest, my reaction to everything that kind of ruined my week. And, you know, when it's just a build up and everything kind of comes at once. So, which is annoying. And what's annoying is because it's, I know that it's my reaction to all this stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not anything that, like I said, it's nothing like catastrophic, but it's my reaction to it that's made me have a bad week. You know, I'm going back to Jacqueline. You know, it's not what happens, it's how you react to it. So I'm working on it. But yeah, that was my personal bad. But then I also wanted to mention something that, like, from yesterday that made me feel really sad, and you'll have seen it too. It's that that 17-year-old girl called Imogen Tothill, I think that's how you say her name, who was missing, and then her body was found yesterday, and it's just really sad. And I think at the time that we're recording this, I think the reasons for her death haven't been confirmed, but apparently it's not believed to be suspicious, and it's really sad. And it's like, it's hard to bring things up like this. It's not hard, but I guess what's difficult is, you know, we want to be lighthearted and fun, but we also want to talk about this stuff like this, because it's important to us, and we want to strike that balance between, you know, making someone's Mondays like really fun, like, or just a little bit more fun, and then also using our platforms and this platform to talk about things that are important to us and the things that really, really matter. So I just wanted to mention it.
Yeah, I agree, Alex. And we're going to put the number for the Samaritans into the show notes today, and the number for Give Us a Shout as well, who are a service that will reply to your text no matter what time of day you message them, just in case anybody is in need of support at the moment.
Okay, so it's not easy at all to transition from bad like that into good. So we're just sending everyone a big hug. And Em, what is your good from this week?
Well, I had to look around. No, actually, I tell you what, it isn't good. And actually, I've the urge to block everybody that sent me a DM saying, oh, I'm so jealous. You've had all this, like, a lot of mums have DM'd me being like, I'm so jealous. Look at you having all this time to yourself. I'm like, oh, suck a dick. But a couple of things have been all right. Namely, my most important one is we've rebooted the Hags this week, the Have a Goes. I mean, I've talked about the Hags on the podcast before, but it's a platform that I run, literally stands for the Have a Goes, and it's about making sporting events, or sport in general, actually less intimidating for people. And it's about having a go and not caring how you do, not caring about coming last, not caring about being slow or how you look or any of that shit. And anyway, I'm obsessed with the Hags, but obviously since my face has been so bad, I just haven't been able to prioritize it in the way that I would like, because I haven't been exercising myself and I've been very busy with the rest of my work and blah 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 blah. Anyway, I have used this time, sat on my ass, and amazing Amy, who is running the podcast Instagram, has come on board to help me do the Hags Instagram. And I made an emotional video yesterday, and it completely reignited all my excitement. And I'm planning some really cool stuff for this year. And that's been really good, because I wouldn't have had the time. Like, I just... It's not that it's not a priority. It's just, you know how things go every day. It's really hard to like add more in, but I've had the time. So we've been able to put a lot of intention into the Hags, which is really cool. And also I've done 3 samurai Sudokus. So, I mean, like, it's not all bad. Let's be honest. I'm living a great life.
That's pretty cool.
Thank you. What's your good this week, Your Honor?
My good, just like a small thing. As I was going to sleep last night, and I was like thinking, like, what's my good? I need to like think of a good. And then I saw that the news about that girl, that her body had been found. And I just, you know, when you go to sleep with anxiety, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And you haven't like properly like gone sort of processed it, but you go to sleep anyway. And so I knew I was gonna have a shit night's sleep, and I did. Like, it upset me, and I woke up really early. But, well, Betty sleeps in our bed, which a lot of people find gross, but I don't. Like, I love it. It's one of my favorite things.
Fuck those
in
people.
The world.
Boo sleeps in at my bed. I love it.
It's one of the most precious and special things in the world. She loves it, we love it, it's just wonderful. And so I woke up really early, and I just felt a bit shit, and she just, it's like she knew, and she came, and she just lay her head on my chest and just like stared at me, but like in the sweetest way. And I lay there, we lay there like that for about an hour until I think she got too hot. And I was just stroking her and I was like, this is so special. It like brought a tear to my eye. I know that sounds really sad, but it was just like such a beautiful moment of, dogs are just the best. I mean, animals are just the best. Like it's like a connection like no other. I know I sound so wanky, but I really felt it.
Oh, well, that's lovely. Boo has been like fucking, she's been like one of those like lions at Trafalgar Square, like just lying next to the bed. Like she won't leave me.
Protecting you at all costs.
Although it's a bit sinister, to be honest, because she just lies either on the floor next to me or on the bed next to me and just barks at thin air. I'm like, Boo, You stop fucking with me. Like, it's not funny. Like, what? There's nothing there. Stop it. She's really getting in my head. No, I don't know. Either she can see something or she's just doing it to fuck with me. But either way,
I love her. Love Bira.
We've all got to have our kicks.
Yeah. What is your awkward? Hit me. I mean,
okay. So obviously, I haven't been with anybody else to be particularly awkward.
You've not a chance to embarrass yourself this week, so
no, not publicly. I just, what I've done is contributed to the spreading of more misinformation about tampons to a naive man. So if everything wasn't terrible enough on Friday, which it was terrible enough, I didn't need this, but my fucking uterus lining was like, woohoo, we're on the way. So I asked Alex downstairs, I was like, can you bring me up a box of tampons? Now, in my head, I thought we had two boxes of tampons in, like, downstairs. I thought we had some regular ones and some super ones.
Okay.
So he brought up the regular ones, and unfortunately for me, just wasn't cutting the mustard, you know what I mean?
Right.
So he brought them up, and then about 2 hours later, I said, babe, can you bring me up the other box of tampons, please? And he was like, oh, I've already bought you a box. And I was like, yeah, but I'm having a really heavy period. And then he passed me the other box and they were also regular, which I think means that he thinks that I got through 30 tampons in a morning.
Oh, Alex, that's so sweet. That's really sweet.
He never said it. That hasn't been confirmed, but I think that must have been his own thought process. Because why else does he think I need 30 more tampons?
It's like a tampon a minute. Jesus, you'd be in and out of the bathroom. Like, you would leave.
I'm like a Formula One pit stop.
Like just machine gunning them up there.
Yeah, so that's just my sort of general awkwardness. What about yours?
So mine is just something very, very, very stupid that I did. I booked flights. My friend's getting married in Rhodes in May, which I'm really excited about. Same wedding month as you, but not the same weekend, don't worry.
Is that how you're telling me?
yeah. By the way, I can't come. She's one of my best friends and I can't wait and it's cool. And I booked our flights to go. And then sent the confirmation to Dave, and he just happened. This is like weeks ago now. He just happened to look at the confirmation. I think he was looking for time for dates, and he was like, "Al, I'm David Light on the tickets." And I was like, "Oh my god, that's my dad's name." So I've put down as passenger names like Alexandra Light and David Light. So I've put my dad's name down and it's rubbish because I did it through eDreams. And like, PSA to anyone who is booking flights, don't do it through one of those, like, I don't know what you call them, like third party providers. Like, do it direct through the airlines, because I cannot get in touch with eDreams for love nor money. I have tried so hard. I can't get in touch with them. So I'm either Dave's changing his name or I'm going to the wedding with my dad. I don't know, but
I think you're going to the wedding with your dad.
I think I'm going to the wedding with my dad.
What?
Ridiculous. So yeah, use this, like, learn from my mistakes. Don't go through those third party things. They look tempting because it's like, oh, they'll do it all for you and you don't have to go through two websites, and they say it's a bit cheaper, but I don't think it is, and then you're fucked if you need to change anything. So yeah, that was my rant.
Most people most people, like, it's not your fault, definitely their fault. We can give them all the blame if you'd like. And if that's the space that we're in, then I'm cool with that. But I do feel like there might have been some human error here.
100%. I don't know how that got past me. I really, really don't.
I do. You called your dad like, you, oh God, I'm doing it.
You're doing it.
You do call Dave dad. And... And yeah, I think this is the natural
It's confusing
next step.
Because my dad's name obviously is David.
I think you and your dad are going to have a great time in Rhodes, honestly.
Do you think?
I think it's a really special time for you both. And I'm personally really excited to see what he does as an Instagram father.
I need to let him know so he can save the date. So yeah, that was my awkward, me just being stupid. Don't be me. Be less like me.
And now I'm excited because it's Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day, Alex. And we have the best Valentine's Day guest ever. We have got the extraordinary, la la la, let me explain here.
Yes.
I'm so excited. I have followed Lala for years. Like, genuinely, I just think she is such a voice of reason and logic and brilliant on Instagram. And she continuously shines a light and has the conversations that I've learned so much from her. I think she's so articulate. I think she's so sensible, so brilliant. And she released a book and it came out this week and it's called Block, Delete, Move On. And it's literally the best dating book ever. It's not about finding the one, in the ridiculously corny and pathetic sense that every single dating book marketed towards women is about, but it's about making sure you don't find the wrong one. And it's such an important shift in my mind in the way that we speak about dating. And I've even found this interview and her book to be really helpful for me as someone who's literally never dated and who has been in a relationship for a decade. So
same.
There is something in this episode for everybody. Even if there'll probably be people listening to this like fucking 2 months into dating the man that they are absolutely convinced is the love of their life, and then they're going to listen to three cynical old women sitting here going, ah, well, fuck this and fuck that, and they're going to go, oh great, well, happy Valentine's Day, guys, thanks so much. But here we are. It's a good episode. I'm really proud of it. I'm really excited by it.
Yeah, it's a really, really good interview. She was brilliant. But yeah, I feel like it's stuff that everyone should know. And I wish we were taught in schools, but we can learn it now. So that's really cool.
Okie dokie. Well, without further ado, please enjoy this episode with La La La, Let Me Explain. Lala, welcome to our podcast. Thank you so much for being here. And congratulations.
Thank you.
Your book's just come out.
It has.
We are pre-recording. It will have.
And yes. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thanks.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
I actually saw on your stories this morning that you're doing a Galentine's Day this year.
I do it every year on Valentine's night. I do an Insta Live for the single people. The married people who are just fucked off with their partners, you know, or you just don't give a shit about Valentine's.
Your honeymoon is well and truly over. You're like,
I'll be there.
So far. And yeah, your amazing book's come out, and that's so this is so annoying for you because you've got to talk, pretend
it's so,
like it's
yeah,
just...
I've got to talk in the future.
Yeah, let's manifest it. It's gone
it's
really
a Sunday
well.
Times be- it's on the Sunday Times bestseller list, number one. It sold 4 million copies in its first day.
Unbelievable.
Unreal. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, it's so brilliant. So,
we're really proud of the TV adaptations coming out.
Netflix bought it.
Well, this is like what's so fun as well, because if you don't follow Lala, which is just impossible because everybody should and does, but you're anonymous. You do all of your Instagramming and your writing anonymously.
Yeah.
Have you done it? How do you do that?
No, so I'm not like super anonymous, like, oh, no one can see me ever. I host events, I like do my own parties and stuff, and I come on podcasts, and you know, like if I was to see somebody reading my book on a train or something, I'd probably be like, hi, hi, who wrote that? But I'm just anonymous in the sense that I just don't really want people to know who I really am. And when I say really am, I'm not anyone different to who I am, but you know, who I really am in the sense that then you could like find my address or find where I live. You know, or address and where you live is the same thing, isn't it? There's many different reasons why I'm anonymous. I also just don't think there's any how my work or account would benefit from having me on the squares. I just don't think it would in any way.
Well, that's the amazing thing about your account, I think, is I learned so much from you, probably because
I don't get distracted by any preconceptions I have about you as a person. I think, like, you know, when somebody else is delivering a really important message, they feel, oh God, she's a bit annoying. This is a bit, you know, I really don't like the way she speaks. And it's like it instantly, and all of your internalized shit, whether it be misogyny or whatever, like gets in the way of you taking a point. But with you, it's like, it's old school in a way. Like you just, there's the words and you read them and you learn. And that's really cool, which I love.
And I can be who you want me to be, you know? And so it's like, I think it really does work. Like exactly as you say, in terms of people learning and taking in the information, because I'm the same as you. I get biased around things. You know, I follow certain sex educators or whatever. And if I see them and I think, you're probably not shagging the same people as me, or like you're probably not, you know, we look worlds apart. And so I can't
relate.
And that's probably a barrier that I need to sort out. But I feel a bit like, well, we're totally different. And maybe your advice is not going to apply to me because you don't understand the world that I'm in. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So I think it's really cool. I really admire it.
So you are a dating educator.
Yeah.
Can you explain to us what that is, and also like how did it come about? I want to know exactly how
it's totally made up.
You
totally
came to be where you are right now.
I don't know what a dating educator is. I just literally made it up as a kind of all-encompassing term.
Okay.
Because actually I'm a social worker. That's what I am.
Right.
That's my history.
Do you still work in social? Do you still practice?
Not statutory, but I would say that what I do is still social work.
I agree.
In one way, it's social. I'm a qualified practice teacher.
Yeah.
And I've done some training and stuff in social work anyway. So I feel like I'm just passing kind of social work education and training on to the masses.
Mm-hmm.
But also before that, I was a sexual health and relationships educator for the NHS. So I guess I've kind of combined the two things. Because in terms of actual dating, like, how can you do well on Tinder? How can you spot, like, a shit person? How can you get over ghosting? A lot of that stuff is really from my own experiences that I've learned that. So in terms of being a dating expert, I'm a dating expert because I've been on so many fucking shit dates, but also I think I can call myself an expert now because I've been doing this for so long on Instagram that I'm hearing so many different stories. I'm working with so many different people. I still do one-to-ones. So really as a social worker, you are very highly trained in relationships, interpersonal relationships, helping people to get over trauma and not pass it on to the next generation and all of that. So that's really what I'm good at. But so I never promise that I'm going to be able to find anyone love. I'm not going to be able to teach you how to be like the greatest at dating that you could be, but I'll be able to teach you how to spot red flags, how to react to them, how to probably, hopefully, not end up in an abusive relationship.
Love that.
Women for like ever have been sold like these dating books and this dating, like, and we're going to help you find the one and we're going to get you married and then you're going to live happily ever after. And this is, you know, it's like, it's just, you're sold a fairy tale, right? And it's bollocks. And if he rubs his left ear, then he fancies you and all this shit, whatever. And it's just so whimsical and silly. Anyway, but it feels like with your book, it's a whole new idea of dating because it's like, it's not, you need to go and find the one. It's, you need to find the right one. Like, there'll be plenty. Don't worry about that. It's more, you need to make sure that when he or she, or when they are here, it's somebody that deserves you.
Yeah.
And it's like the first time, and I know nothing about dating. I've literally never dated. It's so weird. I've got so many questions about just dating. But it's really cool to hear, like, even from externally, like, the rhetoric around dating changing to be, like, stop just like throwing yourself at any man and make sure that it's like one that's really worth it.
And arm yourself with like knowledge that's actually going to help you, not like wear red lipstick because men are attracted to red lips. It's
but
like,
you know, the sad thing is that, you know, one of the biggest selling dating books of all time is Why Men Love Bitches, but it's by a woman. And it's all about teaching women to be much more aloof, to harness their kind of bitch side and play a game to become this really disinterested, really kind of nonchalant about everything, because the theory is that, you know, if something comes too easily to men, they don't want it. So you have to pretend to be a massive challenge. You know, if he calls you, don't answer. Even if you're sitting there watching the phone ring, don't ring back for 2 hours. Don't be available for the date that he asked you to go on the weekend. Tell him you're not available to, you know, all of these fucking games. And I think that's what all dating books seem to teach us, is like, play this game and then you get the guy. And it's like, I don't want to play games because then he's only known me as a fucking clown. Like, what happens then when we do fall in love?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, game over. Now you've got me. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, it's never going to work. And I think that everything needs to be kind of stripped back and people really need to go into the dating world as like you, unapologetically, authentically you. Mm. And if that puts off 200 people, then that's because... You know, not everybody in the world is going to be for us. Yeah, you know, you were really lucky that you met Alex.
Yeah.
And I don't know how long you've been with Dave, but...
4 years, yeah.
Right. So you probably did a bit of dating before meeting him. A
little bit. I was with my ex for 10 years and then I met Dave really shortly afterwards. So I only went on like a few dates.
You know, it's the way I see it is just really like pot luck because there are billions of people out there. And out of those billions... Far less than a million would actually, or probably far less than 100,000 would be, actually be a really good connection.
Yeah.
Like a really good friendship, somebody who actually really gets you. And I think what we often do is kind of like jump into relationships with everybody that we date rather than going, you're like, there's 20 other thousand people that I could be dating and probably are a better match. Like, let me not jump into every relationship.
Yeah. Because I feel that I've learned so much. My relationship with Alex is literally luck on every level. Like, we love each other, which is very lucky, but we met at Glastonbury, where there are 200,000 people. He lives on the other side of the Irish Sea. He was 2 years old. There was no way I was ever going to meet him. No way. Like, never. And then I did. Then he slugged my friend. Then I got over it. And then, you know what I mean? Like, and then we got together, like, 2 years later. It's luck all the time. But since then, we have changed and become a million different people. And I've learned so much, even from literally from following you. I've learned so much self-respect still and still to appreciate myself within a relationship and my time within a relationship. And I think if I ended up now in a scenario where I went dating, it would be an entirely different situation because I'd have gone into it before just like, love me. Like, to every man that I met, I'll do it all. I'll wear the red lipstick. Like, I'll be thick. I'll be a bitch. I'll be whatever you need me to be. And now I'd be like, no, I'm going to be picky.
Yeah.
Which is cool, right? Yeah. We need picky women.
To be picky, you have to be in a place of really happily being single.
Yeah, maybe I wouldn't.
If you're unhappy being single, then it becomes much harder to be discerning about who... You know, because it becomes this desperate thing to just want to be loved. Doesn't matter who loves me. Just and that's the problem is that often, and I don't even think just women do this, but often it's like, do you actually like this person, or are they the only one giving you attention right now?
Yeah,
are they the only one returning your calls? Yeah. Like, do you actually like him, or is it just because he's willing to meet up with you on Saturday? You know, but I think then if you're really content being single, then it becomes a complete different headspace where it's like, oh no, like, I'm really fucking happy, so you have to. And it's such a cliche, it's that old thing, I'm what is that quote that they say, oh, I'm happy being single, and you'd have to be amazing to change that.
Yeah.
That's not a very good quote, is it? Like,
no,
I'd rather be alone than lonely with you.
But that's you know, and that's what I'm hoping with the book is that for people who are in that, because I'm 40 now, and a lot of my friends who haven't had children are kind of late 30s and are doing a lot of dating out of like, fuck. I've got to get pregnant ASAP. I've got to find someone. But what I really want the book to do is go, okay, that's fine. But also, can we just try and focus on like really being happy with your own self and your own company? And then try to find someone.
Is possible? This is like the most cynical, depressing question ever. But women do have a biological, like, it's so unfair.
But men do too. I don't know why they don't talk about this.
Really?
What, like the clock ticking and, we from the age of 35, their sperm declines. Huh. It's not just us. It's a total myth that it's just us. So it's just one of those fucking narratives, isn't it? That's just, women, but men have got all the time in the
TikTok.
World. No, you haven't, bro. Like, your fertility declines at the same time and the same rate as ours.
But like... For your friends then that are in their late 30s, like, and obviously there is this time pressure and they just want to find someone, like they want to date, like, what, when you're speaking to them just as friends, like, what is your advice to them? Like, how do you help coach them through that? Because obviously, like, it's going to be a lot easier if they really want children, so then they want to find someone and have children. I mean, how do you know,
I think people need to know, first of all, I think people need to first of all think about, do you want children, or do you literally, you are that type of person who's like, I fucking love kids. Like, if there's a kid in the room, if there's a kid on the airplane, I want to go and sit next to them and stop, I'm going to hang out with that kid all fucking day. I love kids. I think they're the most amazing things in the world. And I, my absolute dream in life is to be a mother, regardless of anything else. Then that's something. That's something that you need to look at, because that's the really the only reason that you should be having children. Because this whole thing about, like, I want someone to look after me when I'm older. I want someone to carry on my name. Like, fuck you. You're so bringing a human into the world for yourself. That. Like. Are you all right? Like, this world isn't even that great. Like, you know, like, sometimes I think, oh, fuck you, mum and dad. Like, you didn't even ask me first before, like, having me.
And now,
like,
look at the mess I'm in. I've got
to pay all these fucking bills and I didn't even ask to be here.
For fuck's sake. Oh my God, I've never looked at it like that. My whole world's just changed.
I have. I always think that. I always think that you just, no one asks to be born.
No, exactly.
And then they just are. Yeah. And then you're like, you know, that, like, well, that, thanks for all the mental illness.
Yeah, exactly.
just kidding.
You did this to me.
That's so
funny. But I think it's really important to actually figure out, like, do I genuinely really love children and really want them no matter what? Or do I just want children, like, in the context of a family unit? Would I be okay with not having children if I never had the family, like the partner and whatever else? Or, you know, am I only having children because of the... Think about why. Like, is it because society thinks I have to because of my age? Like, am I doing it because everybody thinks... Or do I even... It's because some of my friends, I think they just kind of want children because that's what's expected of them. Mm. And because you haven't completed life, I'm putting this in quite, you know, air quotes. I think some people just have children for the sake of having children because that's what you do. That's the next step. And that's why we've got so many fucked up humans out here. Hmm. So if I'm talking to people about being single in their late 30s, it really is about thinking about actually, why do you want children? And if it is that thing of, I want them at any cost because I just fucking love kids and I want to devote the rest of my next part of my life to raising them, then there's many different options.
Yeah.
There's many. You know, you can freeze your eggs. A lot of these things are very expensive and people will be listening like, it's not that easy. But, you know, there are ways of doing it. There's sperm donors, there's IVF, there's shagging your best male friend who's also in the same position and you've decided you're going to do this together.
Yeah.
You know, there's ways. There's also dating apps that you can meet people.
Yeah, I think it's the pragmatism is often probably not idealised, because we've grown up being sold as women a fairy tale and you have to have this and you have to basically create like the nuclear family, right? Mm. And you're like, mum and dad, and then you're going to have two little kids. And it's like, I guess maybe when you're reaching 40 and you're having to think practically about these options, there are options, but in order to consider those, you do have to like give up maybe a bit of the fairy tale. And like, that's maybe like quite a difficult thing to do, you know, because it's like... Well, my life, you know, you can still have a brilliant life, but maybe it feels like you're giving up what you thought it would look like. And that's probably okay, but...
It's one of those things, isn't it? But I think the main thing that will always be true, regardless of what stage in your life you're at, is that having a child within the wrong relationship with somebody who actually proves to be dangerous or bad for you or whatever is so, so much worse than just never having children.
Yeah.
Like, there is, you know, and it is a big thing to get your head around it. If children have been how you've envisaged your future, then getting to a stage where it's like, actually, maybe I'm going to accept that this isn't happening. It can feel like grief and bereavement. It's massive. And I don't ever want to undermine that. But it's also grief and bereavement to realise that you've had children with somebody who is going to never let you leave, somebody who is financially abusing you, somebody who is stalking you because you've left them and you, you know. So
this is something that I really want to talk to you about. And I think you strike the most phenomenal balance online and with your book, because you acknowledge, and I guess you've had to with your social work, the prevalence of abuse within relationships. And it's just... coconuts, like, it's huge, and it's such a big thing that you talk about, and you have to protect so many women, and that's just, it must just be the biggest responsibility for you.
Yeah, it just feels like, it doesn't feel like responsibility. It feels, I know that I'm quite good at explaining things in a way that makes sense to people. So I think you can read lots about domestic abuse and watch loads of things and sometimes still not have that penny drop of like, oh, fuck, actually, maybe the relationship I'm in might be a bit abusive or whatever. I think I've got a skill of being able to explain things, which is why my name's Lala, let me explain. But it doesn't feel like a responsibility. It just feels like I'm here and I'm able to voice what I know is happening to a lot of people. I mean, domestic abuse is not just exclusively for heterosexual women, but violence, sexual violence, murder in relationships, again, it's not exclusively, but it's far more likely to happen in heterosexual relationships. Mm. But things like control, manipulation, like coercive control and emotional abuse are quite, you know, a lot of men experience that with female partners too. So.
Yeah, it does just feel, but that doesn't feel like dating, but that's such a huge part of what you talk about. And that's so much to put yourself out there in that capacity and talk always about, or so eloquently about such terrifying issues. So
yeah,
I just think that's.
But it doesn't feel like, I think I'm just so conditioned to it because I've been doing it for like 22 years or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like,
I was going to ask how, like, is it heavy? I mean, I imagine your DMs are just full of trauma and pain. And that must be really like a heavy load to bear.
They're also full of really great stuff, you know? And I think that, A, I'm so used to it. This you know, as a social worker, it's 10 times worse. As a social worker, it's not just a DM that you can choose to answer or not. It's a case in front of you with a baby with a fractured femur and, you know, cuts or whatever, and then you actually have to do something about, you know, you actually have a proper responsibility, and it's really that child's life is in your hands. So I think I'm, you know, it's a different thing in my DMs, but it's nothing compared to what I did for a lot longer than I've done this. I'm trained, I'm used to it, and it's not that I'm desensitized to trauma, but I'm like, okay, cool. Some things still make me go, oh shit, like, but I know how to deal with that.
But I was just thinking, like, when you do go on dates or like meet new men, you're straight, right?
Yeah.
So when you meet men, you've been exposed to some of the most like horrendous stuff. Like, basically you are exposed to like male violence and abuse by men. So does this all not just weigh heavy on you when you go to meet someone and you're not like clouded by everything that you know and you've been exposed to? Like, I'm just imagining it all, just feeling like I can't trust anyone. Like, or do you not feel like that at all?
No,
are you,
no.
Do you go in with an open mind?
Yeah, I don't feel jaded or cynical. I'm very realistic about the fact that actually, I mean, whatever gender you are and whatever gender you date, there's lots of problems with dating. I'm not saying it's easy for anyone, but there is specific issues for women who date men. And that's why I've written my book kind of geared towards those people. So I think you have to be realistic that there are issues or potential issues. But I feel very comfortable with the fact that I really know the red flags and I really know the pink flags. So
can I ask about the red flags and the pink flags? Could you explain what, Jen, just like a couple of examples of the red flags and the pink flags that you're looking out for?
So a pink flag is something that you need to take note of, but you don't need to run immediately. A red flag, you need to go. Like, you can't fuck about. Like, if, you know, if you've seen a red flag, it's an indication that things are really bad.
Do not swim in the sea.
Yeah, go. But pink flags are things where it can be like, that seems a little bit fishy, but you wouldn't necessarily run because you don't necessarily know. So, for example, if we're thinking about, for example, somebody who's married, a red flag would be them having a wedding ring in their Tinder picture, for example, or them actually saying, I'm married, you know what I mean? Fucking run. Some people don't take that as a red flag. They continue, and that's a whole other conversation.
Because they don't speak, they're in the processes of a divorce, I've got a horrible time
separated.
A pink flag for somebody who is married would be so if you meet somebody on an app and they say, I've got no social media. Now, to me, no social media is always a pink flag.
Now, Alex's husband does not have social media.
Does he have a LinkedIn?
He does.
Well,
yeah.
Then he's got something, you know.
Secretly married.
Twice. He'll be arrested. No, he'll be arrested for marrying twice, no?
Yeah. Yeah, so a pink flag, to me, it's a pink flag if they've got no social media. But okay. Like Dave, there are some people who genuinely don't have it. So you can't just go, fuck off, that's a red flag.
He's a really good example, actually, of like, weird, but then it's actually, he's just weird.
So running away from that would have been the wrong thing to do, but it's a pink flag. And then if I find out that he's got no social media, and also he can never spontaneously answer my calls in the evenings, or and he can never call me in the evenings, which might indicate that he lives with a partner. So we've got two pink flags there. Yeah. And then if you start collecting all the pink flags, then you're holding a red flag. So it can be like several pinks can add up to a red. Or several pinks might just, you know, one or two pinks might just be a coincidence, might be like, keep noting.
Are there any like behavioural pinks? Because I know that, you know, there will be some behavioural reds. Like, I mean, for me, there would be loads. But...
Yeah, for like abuse and things like that or coercive control. If you've been with somebody and everything's been great and they've showed no bad signs and everything's really going well and they seem like a lovely person, and then you post something on Insta and they're like, oh, there's a lot of cleavage there.
Mm.
Now, that's not necessarily a red flag. It's
not a green
dark
flag, though,
pink flag, I would say.
Yeah.
But if that's just a one-off comment, and they were actually kind of saying, oh, there is fucking hell, your tits look good. You know what I mean? If there's that, and then the next pink flag might be them like making another comment, like, are you really wearing that to go out with your mates? Then we've got two big pink flags, which are definitely amounting to...
Okay, so you're dating someone, right? And we've got two pink flags, okay?
Yeah.
But you can't necessarily pinpoint what it is exactly. You don't really know what's going on. What do you do? Just say this is not for me and I'm off?
I think it's on balance, isn't it? It's on balance of like, how good is everything else?
Yeah.
Like, is this person genuinely fucking lovely, but actually... these pink flags are indicators that we need to sit down and communicate about this. And actually me say right now, I feel a little bit uncomfortable, very uncomfortable with the comments you're making about what I post on Insta, or saying I can't, you know, suggesting I shouldn't go out with these people or whatever. If you can communicate that and iron that out in a reasonable way without them being defensive, without being gaslit or anything, it may be something that you can move on from, move forward, communicate, discuss, get rid of that. But then if those little pink flags for the same thing keep rearing their ugly heads, then, you know. But none of
it's
us
hard,
do. I think this is the problem, is that you don't. And human nature is that when we are hooked on someone and the chemicals are raging and we really like them and there hasn't been anyone around for ages and the sex is fucking great and things are brilliant and I never want to not see them again... we do overlook red and pink flags. We do. We choose to.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that we are choosing abuse or that we're, you know, responsible for our own fate if things do go wrong. But sometimes it can just feel right. And sometimes those flags don't even feel like flags. They just feel like, you don't even really necessarily categorize them as flags, but it's when you're out of it at the other side that you can look back and go, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Those were the red flags.
Do you think there's something to be said for like commenting on your friends' relationships? Because do you think as a friend, if I can see the pink flags, or if you, whatever, do you think it's right for somebody to say, look, I know he seems great, but I've noticed a couple of things and it's kind of weighing on me, or is that just not my place to do that?
I think that's a really important thing to do.
You do.
And this is actually something that people asked a lot when we said that you were coming on, saying like, I see things and I want to do something, but I don't know the right thing to do.
If you listen to my podcast, if you go to the link in my bio on La 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 Let Me Explain and go to my podcast with Women's Aid, I think it's 54 minutes in, we answer a question about how to support a friend who's in a very seriously abusive relationship. But the advice is always going to kind of be the same, which is I think it's a really good idea to mention something, but in... exactly how you said it, in a really good way, actually. You said it in a really gentle kind of like, look, I've noticed this and I love you and I want to say this. But that could, should kind of be it in a way. Like once you've allowed them to know how you feel and like opened the floor to say like, I'm here and if you need to talk to me about it, cool. But I think we all know how we are. Like if anybody had said to you at any point in your relationships, well, you have you had any bad relationships previously? You've just literally had the most greatest.
I've had a really lovely time.
I think for me, I have never been in a bad relationship or situationship that anybody could have told me anything about. And even if I knew deep down, actually, this ain't right, as soon as anybody actually said to me, this ain't right, I'd want to defend him. Yeah. I would get my back up and think like, well, you don't know, you're not in it, you know. So I think you have to remember that. You know, you have to just go gently and you have to offer a space in your friendship where your friend knows that she can talk to you, but it should never become a thing where you're like hammering on for them to try to leave this abusive relationship, because then you become controlling. You're now that.
That's really good advice, actually. That's like, it's like the perfect balance, isn't it? Because you can't engineer someone else's life. Like you just can't. You have to let them like choose their own path. And at the end of the day, they're going to do what they want to do. Mm. Do you know what I mean? If they're, like you say, you know, you're blinded by love in the first, when you first like fall in love with someone, it's, you know, they're unlikely to, you know, to act on other people saying, I see a red flag or whatever, but you can at least plant the seed, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's important to at least open up their eyes to like, oh, hang on, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, even if they don't say, oh, hang on at first, like something is planted and something is there and they at least are aware. So,
and if you think it's real serious abuse, then you know, let them know about services, let them know about chat lines on Women's Aid, Refuge, National Domestic Violence Helpline. Let them know about resources that are available. You could even send them a podcast of mine, not even saying like, I think you're in an abusive relationship, listen to this. It could just be, oh, have you heard this? Have you listened to this before? You know, but yeah, just be there.
That's a good idea, actually. Send them some resources, like one of your podcasts or one of your Instagram posts that like detail stuff, and it's like a nice, softly, you know, gentle approach to
Well, speaking of resources, that was one of the questions that I'm going to start using some of our listener questions, because I feel like our questions could go on forever, but also they'll have better ones. What resources do you think there are for, or would you recommend for? I just had a message from a parent for their young daughter. They want to ensure that they're getting the right like messaging from the world. Oh, like,
I mean, she just needs to buy the daughter my book.
She does. Oh, yeah, that's, really
that's literally
letter,
it. Yeah.
It's a book called Block to Leave Me Alone by Lala Lee Snape. Came out last Thursday. You'll love it.
But there is actually literally a list of resources at the back of it.
Good.
There's
oh,
a
yeah,
list of books. There's a list of... Yeah, and actually, I think it's... I wish I'd read my book when I was... 18.
I wish I'd read your book. I mean, I don't think anything would have changed. Yeah, but not for my own dating. It's for my own thinking about everything and learning about like even in your book, you write about attachment types. And I don't think any of us go into relationships with any self awareness, really. I don't think we, as a generation, and we're all different ages actually, but I don't think women historically have been conditioned to ask for their best. Mm-hmm. You know that they deserve the best. Yeah. And you know, everything's so weird the way we talk about relationships with men and prioritize relationships with men. And you know, again, I wouldn't have done anything differently, but I'd have thought differently and I'd have wanted differently for my friends. And I just would have prioritized differently. And I think it's really interesting. Like, particularly at school, fucking hell. If I could have known, like, I'd have had more fun on my own. I just spent the whole time just, like, wanting boys to like me. And it's like, oh,
my
God, I've just been doing so much better shit. It's so annoying.
It's so shit, isn't it?
Such a waste of time.
Such a waste of time and bloody energy.
But your popularity with boys dictated how popular you were with girls.
Nuts.
You know?
Yeah.
You could be more popular with...
Do you think that's come into adulthood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well... I think at school you're just in this like community, aren't you? I think when you kind of I think if you stay in the sort of same place where you lived and you're kind of maybe in a smaller place, I think in London you can get lost. Mm. You know, you can leave college and you can go off to uni and then you can come back and nobody knows you and none of the same people are still here. So you're less in that kind of, you can just be you. But I think there's, for some people, I think status very much rests on whether
who,
you are,
who you're with,
who you're with,
who wants you.
Yeah.
Jesus, I want me. That's all about it.
This one I read and I was like, oh, oh, this is actually really interesting. And there's just no way I could answer this myself. So someone asked, what is the difference between settling and compromising in a relationship?
Oh,
I know, it's good, right? It's good because I'm imagining that it's. I've not really thought about it, but I'm imagining that it's quite a fine line.
Well, I feel like you do have to compromise in some ways in relationships, but that should really be about like, are we going to go to your parents or mine for this Christmas? You know what I mean? Like, silly stuff. Like, yeah. I mean, but but I feel like they're two completely different things. Because I feel like settling in a relationship means that you have just decided that you can't get anything better or that you won't do any better and that this is your lot and you shouldn't hope for more. And so you're just going to take what you've been given.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas I feel like compromising is, in some cases, bending over backwards and maybe doing a disservice to yourself, or not harming yourself necessarily, but putting somebody else's needs above your own, which can be a positive thing, but sometimes compromising yourself can also be a very negative thing. It can be completely losing yourself in order to put somebody else's needs first.
Okay. But I guess, like, settling in the sense that, like, we are taught that there's a Mr. Right or a Mrs. Right, there's the one, okay, and like if you know like how we were brought up thinking about relationship is just like it's perfect and you find someone and it's like great and you live together happily ever after, and obviously it's not like that. So at what point are you like, I'm experiencing a realistic healthy relationship that isn't always on a perfect level, and then on the other side, like, or am I settling? Do you know what I mean?
I think if you're asking, if you're in a relationship and you're asking that question, then I think there's some alarm bells there. I think you need to look at that. I think that you two both in front of me now would never sit there and ask about either of your partners, am I compromising or am I settling? You know, because you know when you're in a healthy relationship, you know when you're happy, you know when you're content, and it's when those things start to. It's when you start to get those niggling doubts, and sometimes niggling doubts are healthy. Sometimes they're just things that you need to work out. Sometimes you just need to process things. But if you are sitting there going, am I settling in this relationship? And that is a constant thought going off in your head about this partner, then I think you need to look at that. Because I think in a relationship, it should just feel content. You should feel content. Yeah. You should feel at home. You should feel like it's family. You know, there's going to be times where you really are tearing your hair out and feeling like, argh! But then you get over that and you have a takeaway and then you feel content again. And, you know, so I think when you are feeling constantly like, oh, no, this is unsettling and I'm compromising, then you
probably are. It's time to listen to your gut.
Yeah, so a lot of people said in the question box mine, like, when's it time to go? And it's like, I think if you're asking, it's probably time.
Yeah.
But I guess people are so scared to go.
Yeah.
Because you're scared of being...
People who are thrilled and happy in their relationships just don't ask these questions.
No.
Yeah.
But that's then how so interesting. Do you go? How do you go?
It's scary going, isn't it? Yeah. It's so scary.
And this is what we were talking about a few weeks ago, and I was saying that I really wanted you on and wanted to, like, explore this because not to be all about me, but, like, the previous relationship I was in, like, oh, my God, we loved each other so much, still do, like, the best of friends, but, like, I knew and he knew it wasn't right for a long time. In terms of, like, there was nothing physical and it felt like just living with, like, a brother. Like, it was like a brother and a sister. But, like, how do you go? Because that seemed like the most painful, hardest thing to ever contemplate doing. Like, how do you, like, for anyone who's listening, who's in that position, that they know that they need to do something, but they just don't know how, what would you say to them?
You know what? Often those ones become quite messy as well because... That's often when people end up, like, going towards other people. Yeah. And that's the outlet. And, you know, sometimes I think we're almost conditioned to feel like there has to be a catastrophe or a crisis. And that's the only way that a relationship can end. Because I've ended a long-term relationship in the way that you did as well, where it was, I actually still really like him, but we don't. He's just not a bit of me, you know? And it's very hard because there's no drama and there's no crisis and you don't hate them. It can make you feel really uncertain. It's actually easier to end a relationship when it's like, oh, I fucking hate you.
So much easier.
And I think it's a bit like, you've got to pull off the plaster, haven't you? And you've got to realise actually that person's not dying. And actually you can't just use them and be like, well, I'm going to go. And if I really hate being gone, then maybe I might realise that I love them and then go back. Obviously, you can't treat people like that. But I think it is one of those things to pull off the plaster and go. And what's the worst that can happen? No one's going to die.
Yeah.
You might be in a bit of an emotional head fucked place for a little while, get a bit of counselling, do a bit of mindfulness.
Yeah.
It's nothing bad. I think that's what we have to tell ourselves. Like, it's not the end of the world. This was not the only human. This was not the only relationship. Like, and also try to reframe the thoughts about, like, this is so sad. Also, this is exciting.
Yeah.
Because at the beginning of when I met them, it was all brilliant and we had a really great time. And now I'm about to go into the next phase, whatever the next phase is, whether that's a long period of singleness, which is really fun, or meeting somebody new who I'm going to be so much happier with than I was with that last person. Mm.
God, it's a minefield, isn't it? But that is really, really nice advice. And I think, like, it's so cliche, but it does as well come down to, like, communication, doesn't it?
And just, I mean, that's literally the answer to everything.
It really is, Because, I mean, if I had communicated earlier, I would have found out that he felt the same for very different reasons, but he felt the same. And so things would have been so different, but I was too consumed with, you know, I don't know. And it just felt so hard to ever say anything. But actually, you're doing yourself and your partner a disservice by keeping quiet and just burying these feelings.
It's so many different things, isn't it? Because you don't want to hurt this kind person. But also it's that fear of, like, am I making the right decision? Yeah. And that can really hold us back. And I think a lot of us who are overthinkers can really just get trapped in this, like, hamster wheel of just, like, but what might go wrong? And then what might go wrong after that?
Yeah.
And actually, sometimes we just have to live and be and do and pull the plaster off and go.
Yeah.
Do you believe in monogamy?
Yes. But I'm not sure it's necessarily the right thing for humans.
Yeah.
I don't think, history shows us that we weren't monogamous at all, any of us. In fact, women used to have sex with several people from the tribe or clan or village or whatever, because it was a community that raised a child. And so if the woman had fucked like 10 different people, then all the men would get involved in raising this child. Obviously, they'd know which one looked the most like who.
Gotta imagine the Jeremy Giles show back then.
Oh my God, it's chaos.
Would have been huge. Oh my gosh.
I don't know. I think, you know, I find it difficult to have this conversation because I actually believe that polyamory is probably better for most people. But I also think that I have been so socially conditioned that there is no fucking way. Like, I couldn't imagine a man that I'm with even That's holding hands with another woman, like, fuck you, I will fight you, you know? Yeah.
You know, something's wrong with me because I would sooner see Alex holding hands with another woman than having to have the effort of having to have another relationship with another man. Like, I would be like, okay, if you've got the energy for that, then you go on.
you do.
I'm fine. I'll just stay with my book and I'll catch you when you come home.
But that is because you're in a really secure place with
That's
him.
That's because I'm very lazy. Yeah. I just can't be bothered to do this all again.
Yeah. I'm not, it wouldn't be for me, but maybe that's, but those, that's because of reasons of me being like jealous and, you know, it's not positive things that are making me go, monogamy is for me. It's actually all negative reasons why, you know.
Are you happy on your own?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also the caveat to that is that I am seeing somebody and I have been for a really long time, but we're not a match in any way, shape or form, but we have really good sex and that's it.
That's
nice. And he's happy with that. He doesn't, you know, we're both happy with that. So, but I think if I didn't have somebody who I could spend my child-free Saturday nights with, maybe I wouldn't find it as easy being single.
Yeah. So that's, it's like full fuck buddy. Because I get so many comments. Just, get them in Feel Good Friday as well. Like, I've caught feels from a fuck buddy.
Yeah, it's very hard not to.
Yeah.
And I think that you have to be really, communication.
Yeah.
You know, if either of you start, then never keep that to yourself. Tell the fuck buddy how you're feeling, like, because otherwise you do then get into a horrible state. And actually there have been times we've known each other a very long time, but there have been times where I have started feeling like it's not even that I'm catching feelings, but I've started feeling like, well, it's my child-free Saturday. Why haven't you left the day available for me? Mm. You know, and it's like, actually, I can't really make those demands on you because you're not my boyfriend. Yeah, you haven't got any commitment to me, but then I'll get pissed off, you know? Yeah. And then I'll have to check myself and feel like, whoa, like, why are you getting pissed off about this? You know, set your boundaries again, stay. And that's the important thing is communicate your boundaries.
You know, when we talk about women, it's like, oh, like we're so romantic, and we are the ones that are going to catch feels, and we're the ones that are going to make it heavy, and we're the ones that are going to ruin a good thing by bringing our feelings into it, right? Do you think the women do feel more in relationships, or
no?
I don't.
Men are so fucking emotional and dramatic, but we just frame it in a different way.
Yeah, because anger.
I have to say that that's not like, I don't know. But that's not my experience with being with men, you know. And I remember when I first started dating after my ex, and like I was always brought up like treat him mean, keep him keen, you know, you've got to play the game and chase. And Dave was like, what? Like that is not what. And he was like all in straight away. Mm. And I do think we live with this like idea that it's the woman that you know falls head first, head over heels, and
because we're hysterical, we can't contain ourselves, and I think domestic abuse really shows you that domestic abuse is so much more prevalent from as men as perpetrators, and a lot of that is that like obsessive stalking behavior, wanting to completely isolate, being so fucking frightened of the person ever having any contact. These are emotions.
Yeah, it's frustration, yeah. Anger, sadness,
obsession, yeah. Dominance, control, all of that stuff. But we just kind of go, oh, that's anger. That's a kind of like
emotion is synonymous with women.
Yeah.
With women. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. We say women are emotional, men are logical, but it's not very logical to fucking stalk your ex-girl, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, literally. This is a heavy one, and I know we've just talked about domestic violence so much, which is like not the fucking Valentine's Day spirit, but if someone's asked, how would you keep yourself safe in the modern dating scene? Do you have advice for people dating?
Read my book.
Thank you so much. Every question I ask. No, I love it. It's perfect. Good book timing. Yeah, we can read your book.
Yeah, read my book. I mean, I do have a chapter in there called Dating Dangers, which looks at the potential pitfalls that can happen, particularly if you are a heterosexual woman. Well, you don't have to be heterosexual, you could be bisexual. A woman who is dating men, there are all sorts of things that we have to think about, not only... And actually, I would say anybody, queer people too, but particularly if you're meeting up with a man, you do need to be very careful about not going to their house for the first date, meeting up in public, not letting them know where you live, making sure that you tell somebody where you're going and who you're going with. Don't give out too much information online. You know, like if you work in the Sainsbury's in Wembley, you can just say you work at Sainsbury's. You don't need to say I work in Sainsbury's Wembley, you know? And also things like drink spiking on first dates. You know, we do have to be aware of things like that. And then, you know, the book goes kind of deeper into like the dangers of actually dating and getting into bed with somebody in this day and age where rough sex is so prevalent, where you might... The chart, you know, there's about a 40%, maybe even higher, chance that the person that you're sleeping with will put their hand around your throat the first time.
40%
choking.
Chance.
It is a significant thing that is happening now. It's become so incredibly normalised. And because it's so normalised, especially young people, it's happening in first sex situations, and young girls are just going with it. And I say young girls because it is very gendered. And then, of course, there are queer people and there are women who are attempting to choke men in bed, but strangulation is a really gendered thing. And in terms of domestic abuse and domestic homicide, it's very gendered. Most women who are killed by a partner are killed by strangulation. So it is prevalent, it is common, and it is one of the things that you might face if you are out in the dating world and meeting up with people and having sex with them. As a woman, there is a high chance that there is going to be some horrible pornified sex.
What with sex specifically? What, you know, we said when you're going out dating and how you can protect yourself and, you know, not giving your location and that sort of thing. With sex specifically, is there anything you believe that we can do I mean, and that's a horrible, like, it feels like an almost victim-blaming question because it's not our responsibility, but genuinely with the interest of safety and with the, you know, because already we know that porn had a huge influence on us, you know, and our peers and boys and whatever, as we had sex, but it is getting worse, right? Like, TikTok it even makes it so much worse. So with that in mind, like, I don't ask it to be like, oh, it's a woman's responsibility to protect herself, but just from a genuine safety aspect.
Well, I think part of the problem is, and many of us will know this over the years, is that we go along with it for a multitude of reasons. You know, like, sex can sometimes be quite frightening for women, and the things that men want to do, spitting in your face or like the choking thing or hitting or pulling hair or whatever without consent, because of course that's a whole other conversation. If these things are happening within the confines of a BDSM consensual relationship, that's do what the fuck you want to do, have your safe words, be cool. But if it is just because this is how this guy thinks women want to be fucked, because he's seen so much porn that has shown him, yeah, grab her hair and slap her about a bit. We have to really learn how to use our voices. We have to. And I think we have to get rid of that fear of not being liked, not being wanted, not being desired, not being good enough, not matching up to how his ex was in bed. You know, there's many of us who have laid there and gritted our teeth while horrible things are happening just because we want to be cuddled at the end and we want him to still like us. Yeah. It's very difficult as a woman mid-sex to go, no, stop. This is horrible. I don't like this. And actually, that's probably not the best way to do it. There are probably better ways to do it. But actually, if it's horrible and rough, you should stop proceedings. Stop. But if you think, actually, this is someone who's just being like clunky because they don't know what they're doing, you could say, that doesn't turn me on. I'm really not. But I don't know why we even need to necessarily be polite. I think if a man puts his hand around your throat in first time sex without consent, even if he is just some geek who's learned too much from porn, I still think,
we do prioritise politeness and likeness.
Yeah. What is going on here? You need to see him differently. Fuck laying here thinking, is he going to like me? What? Why do you still like him?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So this did come up a lot, actually. So online dating, brutal.
Yeah.
And it is, by its very nature, appearance based totally, because that's all you can see from a screen, really. I mean, you've got a few interests, whatever, but it's swipe on what they look like. For someone who doesn't, like, obviously we have a standard of beauty in society, right? For women especially, thin, you know, thinness is desirable according to society. So for people who don't meet that standard and by society's standards aren't attractive, I'm putting that in air quotes, how do they handle online dating and just how brutal, how like savage it is?
I've written about this in my book.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
I've literally covered everything that I think anybody needs to know. And that is one of them, which is like negging online or being made to feel unattractive or fetishization.
Can you define negging just for those that might not know what it means?
So negging is it's quite strategic. It's, I don't know if you've ever heard of The Game by Neil Strauss, I think his name was. So he's like the godfather of the pickup artist, the PUAs. Mm. And if you've read Men Who Hate Women by Laura Bates, such a good book. And she talks about the pickup art, the PUAs, and where they fit into the manosphere, which is this corner of the internet, which is an ever-growing corner of the internet, where it's just a corner of misogyny, really, isn't it? In many different forms. It's where the incels live and the men go in their own way. And pickup artists are people who use dating apps and, like, street seduction shit, to try to employ game on women. So for them, it's not about actually meeting people with any meaningful interaction, like connection or anything. It's about quantity over quality. Can I get as many women as possible to prove my manlyhood, to show that I am the man, you know? And
women are the ridiculous ones.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this is all for the benefit of other men. You know, they post this up on these Reddit forums and 4chan and whatever to show off to other men that they can get all these women. And one of the techniques that they recommend is a technique called negging, And negging is either an outright criticism or a backhanded compliment. So it might be like, I could say to you, Em, you look absolutely gorgeous, but your feet are massive or whatever.
I've got a good example. I was DM'd a thing the other day being like, if your skin were better, I would fuck you.
Oh, God.
Yeah, whatever. Like, I would fuck you every which way. I was like, I would rather be covered in spots from the top of my head to the tips of my toes.
Christ.
But that was, yeah.
But this is what they do. Because the theory behind it is that, and they often do it in bars and stuff as well, the theory behind it is that you will stand out from the crowd because in their heads, all women have got like a flock of men in their DMs desperate to speak to them, and that women can have their pick of any man that they want to, and that if you're the one who's like not fawning over her, you're the one who's like, you're not all that, then you're going to stand out more.
It's the same games that we play to an extent, except
bullshit. Yeah, exactly. And the other theory behind it is that if you bring a woman down a peg or two and make her feel a little bit unconfident, then she's going to then be seeking your approval. And that's, you know, negging is often used with a negative, and then they'll give you a positive, and then maybe another negative, like a shit sandwich, so that you're like thriving from the validation that you got from the nice thing, and then they bring you down, and then you're seeking their validation constantly. And it works. Mm. That's the thing. It fucking works.
Yeah.
So this was back to, I can't even remember what was.
If anything, it's like really confusing though, isn't it? Like when you receive an insult wrapped up in a compliment, like it's confused. It's, I think, I'm going to say a word now. It might not be the right word. It's discombobulating.
I've never known what that meant, you know.
It's very confusing.
Throws you
it?
Off balance.
Discombobulated. Like, you're just like, oh God, I'm so confused.
Yeah. It's just like, I kind of got their approval. I've got a bit of validation from them, but I also haven't. And it makes you possibly what? It's confusing.
It's also disguised as banter. And a lot of us do banter in that kind of sarcastic way. And especially with our mates and stuff, like where it can be like, you know, you kind of cuss each other a little bit, like not in a horrible way, but like if you are bantering, you can be like, that's the kind of stupid thing you do or whatever.
And if we don't take it, then we can't take a joke.
Yes, that's like, it. Yeah. Exactly.
Men do it to me all the time, literally all the time. And it's like, and it's odd because even though, there's so many things I would rather do than ever be in the same room as any of these people, it does still to an extent work because it's the initial, it's discombobulating because you get a minute like, oh, what the fuck? And the down and the up just happen so quickly. Like, oh God, that was weird. Yeah. And it does, I can see, it is a head fuck. I can see how it, how easy it is to mould a person by using that technique because you end up as the victim of it, just being so much smaller. Because you think, oh God, well, am I? It's just like that.
It leaves you vulnerable.
Yeah, and you're like, well, they like me, but they still think this about me, and that's weird. Yeah. Like, because maybe I am quite close to great, but also, but I mean, this question was in relation to those that go online dating, those that don't fit into the societal norms, and so negging is used presumably for those dating apps.
Well, yeah, but I think that is something because what are societal norms? We're talking about the media. That is societal norms, but I think normal humans know that we all come in a big, massive range of attractiveness, and that it's all on a spectrum, and that what you find attractive is not what I'm going to find attractive, and vice versa. You know, I think people need to not judge themselves on dating apps in comparison to what they're seeing on like influencers and things like that, because that's not who you're in competition with on a dating app. You're not even in competition.
You don't see the other women on a dating app. That's so true.
Yeah,
you only see the people that you're assuming. Sorry, it's so hetero terms that we're using. That was a really bad sentence. The terms that we're using are very heteronormative, and I apologize. But if you are a woman looking for a man on social media, you're not going to see the other women. So you would probably assume, like you say, like that all the other women are going to be like Instagram filtered, whatever.
And just know that when you're scrolling by, and if you are dating men and you're seeing like that guy's hot, that guy's ugly, 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 and that's, you know, again, not. Humans aren't ugly, but they're not your type, for example. So you're like left, left, left. That's going to be exactly the same. Like, it's not just going to be like reams of fucking models that these men are like going through, you know? I think if you are feeling unconfident and you're like, you know, I think if you're feeling unconfident and unattractive, it's not a good time to be dating. I don't think you should put yourself out there at that time.
If you're in a good space, you know that the men that don't like you, that's, you wouldn't want to be with them anyway.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
And it's, and I think women are so conditioned to just prioritize being liked by all men and to aspire to being liked and fancied by all men. And it's like, you want all the boys tripping over you, and you want all the boys, like all the boys. It's like, you're never going to get all the boys, yeah, and not all men. This is another way we can use that sentence.
I know.
But not everyone's going to like you. And
totally.
It's like,
yeah. I know. And I don't know why I keep playing devil's advocate. I'm really sorry. But like, I'm just thinking, like, because for some people, they will never be okay with themselves.
Mm.
Like, women, I'm sure we know women in their 60s, 70s that their self-esteem is on the ground, you know?
Yeah.
So I think like, there's a level of, like, being realistic as well. It's like, some people don't have the means to be able to work to a place where they're okay with themselves. So I don't know why I'm saying this.
But, you know, but I think that's an interesting point, because, you know, I was just flicking through in my head all the women that I do know in their 50s and 60s and 70s. Actually, I really think that there is a sense when you get into your 50s and older that you give much less of a fuck.
Yeah.
And you actually learn to be more comfortable in your skin. And I think aging probably does that as well, because it's almost like, I'm not a 20-year-old anymore and I'm never going to look like that again. You know, I think you go through this period when you're in your 20s and your 30s and it's like, I have to be at the peak of my buffness, you know, I have to look a certain way. And then you kind of get to a certain age and you realise, well, that's not... However I've looked, you know, I've been skinny, I've been fat, I've been this, I've been that, and nothing has really changed over those periods. Like, I've never been... I was happier when I was skinnier or anything like that. And I think women get to a certain age and kind of just go, oh, fuck this. I'm not participating in this shit anymore. Although there's probably 60-year-olds listening and thinking, actually, my self-esteem is on the floor. And if you ever feel like, it's therapy.
The same advice isn't going to work for everyone, right? And, like, I think that it must be hard for you as a dating expert, because there are people, and particularly on social media, who like... not to, you know, like, every morning I walk to a pond and I put up an affirmation on my Instagram stories and I say, seize the day. And someone without fail replies going, I can't. I haven't got any hands. No, I'm joking, not that. But someone every day, I put a positive affirmation up and somebody replies with a reason why they can't do the affirmation. And yeah. I'm like, well, then don't do it. Fine. I've tried. I can't help you. If you don't want to help yourself, I don't want to help.
Just live, laugh, love, babe.
Yeah, exactly. Just forget I said anything. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's a bane
in
my life.
You cannot cover every fucking nuance.
But you've done really well in your book to try and do that.
Yeah, I've really tried.
Yeah, sure. But I just think it's exciting, and I think it's really empowering for not just young women, but for all women.
Yeah.
What I feel like your book does and what your Instagram does is give women back the power that I feel like has had been taken away from us.
And it's so true. Like, not even, and also women in relationships as well, as we said. Yeah. You know, you can still even be in a relationship, but to know all this stuff is really, I think, empowering.
Yeah, I think it's a book that might help you to... help your single friends or your single little sister or, you know, even if you are married or whatever.
So if you could leave us with a few parting words of wisdom, which I know I'm putting you on the spot here, and it's difficult because this is obviously very general because you're speaking to everyone listening, but about being a woman in a relationship and valuing yourself, I'm putting the words in your own, in your mouth, but like, what would your words be?
I think just know that you are absolutely equal to men, that you are not an over-emotional freak, that you are not here to be picked, you're not here to be liked, you're not here to people please, you're your own autonomous, independent person, and you can absolutely thrive without ever going near another man again. And then when you get to the point where you are completely comfortable and love yourself massively, then you can invite men in, but only with the knowledge that you don't fucking need them, you want them.
I want to stand up in the air and I like...
Stand up in the air!
That was...
I want to stand up and punch the air is what I was trying to say. That was literally the perfect note to end on. We can't thank you enough for being here. And you have to come back for part two because we have so many other questions.
So many questions. Your annual Valentine's guest.
Yes,
oh
please.
My God. Yes.
See you next year. Same time, same place. For the Netflix reveal of the book.
Oh yeah, my third book will be out by then.
Yeah, you've been so busy in that time.
I'm optimistic to think people will still be listening in a year, but okay. We'll see.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
See you next
Thanks
year.
For having me. Bye.
See you next year.
What an interview.
I know. Let's go out of the pool tonight, Al.
Yeah, divorcing Dave.
Dave Light, Dave Melia, who knows? Many Daves.
Which fucking Dave? We've got too many Alexes, too many Daves.
Cancel Dave on the booking. You don't know who you're going to take. You don't need a plus one to that wedding. You go, single Pringle.
No, you don't.
No, quite exactly. Right. Go on your own, Al. Thrive.
That last line, that last sentence that she finished on, I was just like... boom.
I know.
Like, wow. I know. That is so good. I was like, mic drop moment. Just absolutely brilliant. And I hope that resonates with a lot of people. Okay, so is it just me, which I always look forward to. I love this section.
Segment.
So I've got an embarrassing story for you. It really made me laugh. It was sent in on our email. And we've actually had quite a few, but if anyone has any embarrassing stories or is it just me that they want us to tackle, please send it into shouldidelethatpod@gmail.com. So someone wrote in, I'll keep her anonymous. When I got my coil put in, no one told me how traumatic it was going to be. Poor girl. I was sick all over the nurse and collapsed. Oh my God, poor, poor girl. I don't know why it was that traumatic. Like,
mate, mine was. I was sick and I've collapsed. I wasn't sick on another person. Yet mine was truthfully one of the worst things that ever happened to me. It was really, really bad. It was really bad.
Wow,
which that's why I was so scared to get it taken out, because getting it in was... We are doing a contraception episode. Do not worry, guys. It's coming. But yeah, mine was really bad having it. Still worth it. I absolutely fucking best 6 years ever with it in. But yeah, my insertion was horrific.
Really?
I would still recommend it. And I say this all the time. I've talked about it loads on Instagram. I would still preface all of that with saying it was still a great decision. The best contraception ever. I absolutely loved it. However... yeah, the insertion was really bad.
I didn't know that. Actually, I didn't know that because, like, my friends had it done and they said it was fine. I had it done and it was fine. And I made sure I didn't Google anything beforehand.
Smart.
Because I didn't want to hear the horror stories. So the same thing happened to this girl. When I put my coil in, no one told me how traumatic it was going to be. I was sick all over the nurse and collapsed. When I came to, I thought the doctor was comforting me by holding my hand, and I tried to hold hers back. But she said to me, "I'm trying to take your pulse." Oh, bless her.
Oh, no.
That's so sad, isn't it?
No.
That's really sad.
Oh, no.
So sad.
Oh, no.
Do you know what? It's actually just reminding me of... I was in a restaurant with Dave, and it wasn't even like a particularly fancy restaurant, but the chef was like coming out and talking to people, right?
Yeah.
So he came to us and we were just like, yeah, like, burger was great, thanks. And the chef held, when he was leaving, he went to fist bump Dave, right? But Dave went to shake his hand and, like,
oh, no.
Wasn't backing down at all, Dave. Like, I just wasn't getting it quick enough that this was a fist bump, not a handshake. So he shook the man's fist. And, like, when I tell you, like, watching it was like slow motion watching it, and I laughed about it for so long. Like, I cried laughing because it was just so Dave. Like, he's so awkward and like just like the like least cool person ever. And this man was like, yeah, fist bump, and Dave just shook his fist. It was,
you know, one of the worst things I ever did was when I walked... why does it always happen at the gym that someone held the gym door open? Like, I'm not that tall, so held the gym door open for me, but obviously, like, he was above me, so he put his arm out to help the gym door, and I thought he was going for a hug, so
I just
like slipped myself in to the gap under his arm. It wasn't meant for me.
I'm dying.
It wasn't meant for me. Oh god. And as soon as I landed, I was like, this is not where I belong. It was really bad.
That's so good. That is really, really, really bad. Like, I would pay to have footage of that.
Oh, God. It was, honestly, I, it's really embarrassing. Oh. I think about it all the time. I hate it.
It's an awkward world.
It's horrible. I have an Is It Just Me? So, yeah, this came in over email. It's short and it's sweet, and I'm actually interested, Alex, to hear your answer. Hi, Em and Alex.
Okay.
Loving the podcast so far.
There we go.
Gotta read the praise. My question is it okay that I hate smelling another person's fart? that I love to smell my own.
Oh my God. This actually ties into, oh, I was doing confessions and yeah, someone said I like to smell my own farts. And then, no, I like to cupcake myself with my own farts.
Right. So cupcakes and you fart into your hand and then you bring your hand to your face, presumably.
Yeah. So the idea is that you trap the fart and then bring it to your face.
Yeah, because it's a Dutch oven when you fart under the duvet and then you...
Exactly. Yeah.
Look at us. We're down with the kids.
Many people responded to me and said that they enjoy cupcaking themselves.
I just feel like that's bad hygiene. Like you're putting all your poo particles in your hand and then you're bringing them... to your face, and how many are you like dropping off along the way, you know what I mean? I guess it's like carrying water, like you're gonna spill, it's impossible, so you're gonna drop most of them.
Oh, definitely. And like, don't get me wrong, I would rather smell my own than anyone else's, but I don't actively want to smell my own.
Yeah, it's not like I don't mind the smell of my own farts. I don't like, they're not like, ugh. Like when I smell other people's, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, it's definitely less nauseating. Yeah, for sure.
I actually just want to tell you something really sad. I've lost my sense of smell.
Oh my god, I
have no appetite, but obviously because I've got this operation I really need to keep my immune system like strong next week and stuff, so I'm forcing myself to just eat loads of vegetables because and like drink Barocca and like just I'm just basically making everything that I do eat, even though I don't feel like eating, just really nutritional because I'm a grown-up now. That is peak fucking adulting, if I've ever heard it. I'm a bit sick, so I'm gonna eat vegetables.
It really is.
I know. Anyway, I ate a whole load of Brussels sprouts.
But you need to have this operation.
Exactly, yeah. So I ate a whole load of Brussels sprouts the other day. Fucking love a sprout.
Love
them so much. And then obviously afterwards I was like trumping like it was nobody's business because sprouts, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. And I was aware that I could have been creating a Dutch oven type situation. That's why I know the lingo. But nothing.
Yourself.
I couldn't smell it.
Driven in yourself.
Yes. But I couldn't smell it because I have no smell.
Poor Boo, no wonder she keeps barking. Jesus. She's like,
what the fuck is that?
Cupcake, Dutch oven.
I've created like, Chernobyl up here.
Justice for Boo.
I know. Yeah, that actually does make a lot of sense now. She's not barking at nothing. She's barking at my poo particles all over the room. Yeah, I don't like the smell, but now I can't smell it. And actually, I miss the smell. I would like to feel connected with myself in this way again.
Yeah, when I lost my sense of smell, I hated that I couldn't smell myself.
Well, you know, I don't think I've ever talked about this. I've got a, I don't want to use the word phobia, but I guess it probably is a phobia to an extent. I'm absolutely terrified of smelling. Like, I have a real thing about hygiene, like I always have done. It's weird. Anyway, and this morning, during the spider debacle, I got my first sniff of something that I've had in a really... I haven't been able to smell anything for ages. It couldn't have been the fucking lovely neon candles I've got behind me that was my first... Nope, it was me. I just smelled something and I was like, oh my God, I think that's me.
Body odour.
I think so, yeah. So I had another shower. I'm showering twice a day, but I think it's just because I'm just festering. Anyway, yeah, send her in. I don't think it's just you that likes the smell of your own farts. I think...
It's not just you. It's overwhelmingly not just you. Yeah, this is the thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a far cry. I think cupcaking yourself does feel like next league to me. Like, I feel like there's like enjoyment and then there's a cupcake.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you definitely advance a level when you cupcake yourself.
Yeah. It's like going premium. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like
it's paying. Yeah. It's paying membership. Yeah. So you don't get the adverts. I think that's kind of
but
like,
you do what make you know, you do what makes you happy.
Live your life. They're only poo particles.
Yeah. Cupcake yourself. Who cares? As long as you're not harming anyone else.
How much would you have to be paid to poo in your own hand?
Not much. as long as I didn't have to like eat it.
No, you just have to poo in your own hand. I just think the indignity would be quite funny. You've got to catch it, hold it, look at it, smell it.
Yeah, but okay, hang on. You're adding layers now.
Right,
like,
okay,
what
fine.
What do I have to do? Do I just have
you
to
just
poo
put
my
your
hand?
Hand underneath your bum?
Yeah.
Poo in it.
Yeah.
Just pull it out once it's finished, and it's just been like laid on your hand, and then you just like pull it out, and you're like, "Hey, I did that."
Well, not that much.
What are we talking here? Is it something I could pay you to do, for example?
Definitely. Yeah. Give me a fiver, like pay for my coffee and I'll poo my hand.
Will you actually?
I don't know.
Oh my God, do
But like, that's not, I just think like, it's, as long as you can get rid of it straight away and like wash your hands like 17 times straight away.
I just think there's an indignity to it.
I just feel like I've lost a lot. I don't have much self-dignity. Yeah, I don't think that would bother me too much, really.
Right, well, I think you're a fucking weirdo.
I wouldn't enjoy it, don't get me wrong, but if I'm going to get some money for it...
I just want to feel like, I don't know, is it just me? I want to know, sometimes I think, like, I don't have scales because I have a historically bad relationship with my body and I don't want scales in my life, so I don't have them in the house. There are two occasions on which I would like to weigh myself in this day and age. One of them is I would like to weigh my boobs individually and see if they weigh the same. And two, I would like to stand on the scales before I have a poop and after I have a poop to see how much the poop weighed. But also an option, I suppose, for that, so that I wouldn't need to buy big scales, is I could just poo in a bowl and then weigh the poo. But I feel like that's a lot.
This is taking a turn. I mean, like, I thought cupcaking was next level, but we've now gone to like weighing your poo in a bowl on some like baking scales.
It's only because I already have baking scales and I'm bored. I haven't seen another human being for 7 days. Why not, you know?
I think you'd be surprised at how little both weigh, like both boobs and poo. I think it'd just be like literally a couple hundred grams. Like, I don't think it would be much at all.
Just stay there. How much does the average poo weigh? How much does the average... Don't say we don't ever teach you anything. Oh my God. It could be up to a pound.
Up to a pound. That's actually way more than I thought.
What's a pound?
Oh, like what weighs a pound?
Yeah, what weighs a pound? A shoe? I'm doing poos that weigh the same as a shoe.
No. Wait, listen, a jar of peanut butter, a bag of coffee beans, a paperback book, a can of beans, a loaf of bread, a shower towel, a wireless keyboard, a small tablet, a ketchup bottle, a small painting, a toy car, a beer bottle, a small mixing bowl.
A beer bottle with beer in it?
Yeah. Well, I'm assuming so.
A beer bottle? I'm pooping out a beer bottle every day. Every day of the school day. What do you know?
We've really ventured into new territory. I like it. So... I've got another embarrassing story for you, but this one needs a visual, okay? So I would like, if everyone can, go to the Should I Delete That Instagram, and we're going to have it up there. We're going to have a GIF up there because I feel like you need to see it as you're watching this, right?
Okay.
So someone wrote, I volunteer for my local Scouts group and occasionally I'm involved with organising camping trips with the kids and so on. We have a Facebook message group with all the different Scout leaders and volunteers from across the country and any parents that want to help out with the group activities. Whilst chatting on this Facebook messenger about an upcoming trip for the kids and planning all the travel, restrictions, food, safety and so on, I meant to add an emoji to my message, but because I have stubby sausage fingers, I accidentally ended up sending a GIF of a potato pooing out chips. I had hilariously sent it to my boyfriend a few days before, so it was in my recently used. I don't use Facebook Messenger often, so I had no idea how to delete it. Loads of people were already seeing it in the chat, and in my sheer panic, trying to frantically delete the pooping potato GIF, I ended up liking it. The chat fell silent. And I basically had to send an apology in case anyone was offended by said potato.
Okay, that's actually endearing and adorable and absolutely fine. And because what I saw, there's somebody I follow on Instagram who in their parents' WhatsApp group, they've got kids, in their parents' WhatsApp group, accidentally forwarded an unsolicited dick pic that they got on Instagram. I also saw another instance where a woman sent a naked photo of her own vulva to the WhatsApp group with all the kids in, and rather than behave like normal, decent human beings, all the dads were like, all the people in the group were like, ugh, gross, this isn't appropriate. And it's like, good God, the poor woman feels embarrassed enough as it is. So,
oh no, that's so embarrassing.
To be honest, a potato pooping out another potato... Arguably, I'd welcome that in a Facebook Messenger group. I think you're fine. It could be so much worse.
It's so sweet.
Yeah.
And I just imagine her panic. And please, Em, just go and look at what I just sent you in the chat. I just feel like you need the visual because it's so cute.
Oh, okay. So it's a bit more...
graphic.
Yeah, than I thought. It really has got a big bum hole, huh?
I just love that she ended up liking it and then sent an apology. So sweet.
Oh my God. Yeah, okay. The more you look at it, I can see why she's embarrassed now. It doesn't sound that bad. And then you see it, it's quite bad. It could be worse. It's not your naked vulva, but it's not great. And just before we go, obviously we did talk about this in this episode as well as last week's, and that's the pressure on women to have children, like the societal pressure and the way that we speak about procreation and children and what's expected of women. And actually the response that we had to the conversation last week was so massive in my DMs, in our DMs, in the emails and everything. And we are going to do, going forwards, a proper episode dedicated to this and to women who don't want children. So if there's anybody that you would like us to speak to, anybody that you think would make a great guest for this episode, please let us know. And before we end this episode and before we do open that conversation up again, I just wanted to read a message that I was sent via DM. There were a lot like this, but I just wanted to share it because we don't often hear from women who don't want children and their voices aren't often shared that much. So I just wanted to share this for anybody who was in the same position. Hello, I just want to say thank you so much for this week's podcast episode, especially for the chat around the no kids. Me and my fiance decided very early on in our relationship that kids weren't for us. And even as a 20-year-old, his mum would constantly ask when she was getting grandchildren. We used to just laugh it off, say they already had one because of our dog. But it got to the point where every time we saw his family and then his younger brother had children, and it intensified, and we just had to break the news to her, even though I wasn't particularly comfortable with everybody knowing our decision at that point. I'm much more open and honest now and will shut people down if they ask, but my brother recently had a baby with his wife and I'm getting married this year after 10 years together, and I can already feel the eyes on me. It's because I have now a nephew and I'm getting married, people are expecting my decision and priorities to shift. And to be honest, I love my nephew, but it has solidified my decision. Parenthood isn't for me. I just wanted to say thank you for having this conversation and highlighting how life and priorities are different for everyone, and there isn't a shame in that. I sometimes feel like I'm denying mine and my partner's family of something by not having kids, and grappling with that over our own feelings can be hard. So thanks for the amazing podcast and conversation starters. I hope you feel better soon. Yeah, I just want you to know that I think a lot of people feel like they're on their own with this, because it does feel like women of a certain age are just baby mad, but that is not all women, and a lot of you don't want children, and that's absolutely fine, and you're not on your own with that. So we will talk more about this in a future episode, but I did just want to share that.
I'm good on anyone who's exploring it, no matter what conclusion they come to. Like, I think it's brilliant to explore it before, you know, you make a decision either way, and explore what you actually want rather than what you think you should do. So
100%.
It's cool to hear that, really cool. And I hope hearing things like that makes other people feel
less alone,
you know, less alone, comforted, and sort of allows them space to navigate this as well. So nice.
Perfect. Well, we're going to be back next week with another episode. We will see you on Monday. We hope you have a lovely Valentine's Day, whether that be in the throes of passion with somebody great or on your own eating a pizza and fucking hating everybody. We hope you have a great great time either way.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author Elizabeth Gilbert about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.